T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's go to our friends in Canada on Tuesday nights. We hook up with them. Drex is out on vacation, I believe. And let's see if Shane's there.
Ryan, is the Ryan there?
Yes, Shane. How are Hello. You?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you? It's nice to make your acquaintance.
I know. We get this opportunity to connect these two radio programs. I understand you're going to be filling in for Drex over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, just kind of sitting in. He gets to go on vacation, and we sit here and do the work. And work. Listen to me. I'm saying it sounds like it's work. It's not really work.
How long have you been doing radio?
Radio. All right. I started radio in 1996.
Uh-huh.
Talk radio, though, has only been a few years. I did mostly music radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been all across Canada that I've done it. Most of my time has been in Calgary.
Yeah.
Most of my career and most formats. What about you?
It's weird because most radio personalities, at least this is one of the trends in the United States, is that talk radio hosts are leaving the talk format to go do music. So you did the opposite. You left music to do talk radio.
I did. I can speak for 7 seconds without a clock like nobody's business.
You could ramp up a song. Do you have those moments in the back of your mind when you're listening to a song, you know exactly how much time you have left until the vocals come in?
Yeah, there's a bit of a metronome clock that kind of goes on over the course of time.
Yeah.
And it's like when you voice commercials, this is inside Radio Geek stuff, but when you voice commercials, the producer will say, okay, read it. And then you read it and then you finish the commercial. You're like, nah, that's too short. I'll do it again. And they're like, it was only 28 seconds when it needed to be 28 and a half. How did you know that?
I know that for me, I was in music radio. Then I went to manage a talk station. And then for the last couple of years, I've been doing this talk program. So I kind of have a weird path to talk radio as well that started in music.
Which one is your favorite of all of it?
Talk radio, by far. I don't want to go back to managing a talk station. It was over. It took so much time and energy, and it felt like I never did enough. It was an ongoing, nonstop from the moment you woke up to the moment you went to sleep, and you never felt like you got enough done, and it was a terrible feeling. I felt like I missed so much, and I had to put everything else on hold because of that. But I feel like I get a lot more freedom doing a talk show, and I have a lot more fun doing it too.
Well, I think it's become more relevant, and I don't want to say it like the 80s and 90s AM radio, talk radio wasn't relevant, because those were some fantastic and iconic times in our industry. But today, with podcasts, there's something really special about being able to be in the conversation. I like podcasts. You turn it on, you're in the car, you're driving, and you consume it, right? And the magic of talk radio today is that it's just an active, fluid conversation. And in a world where everyone's got, 180 characters or whatever capped out that they can send anywhere, imagine the opportunity to connect with people. And that's where I think that there's a lot of people, get all cynical about, media in general. And I look at it and I say, no way, man, this is a magical time. Music radio, yeah, there's some problems there. But for talk radio to me has more of a future now than it ever has.
Yeah. Do you mostly listen to Canadian podcasts, or do you listen to, theme podcasts or music podcasts, or what do you listen to?
That's a good question. I like wellness stuff in that study. I like the study of humans. And I do a lot of writing around words, the use of, not big surprise as a radio guy, but the use of language and how it affects our lives. So I really like to listen to that. I listen to some poetry stuff too. And I don't listen to a lot of radio programs on podcasts. There are a few that I like to get caught up with friends and stuff. But really, I like to listen to just people talking.
Yeah.
What about you?
Are you married? Oh, yeah, I do, too. I listen to other radio programs. I'm curious what other personalities are doing, but I find myself listening to the same ones because I enjoy their show. But I also like to listen to, just in general, some of the NPR podcasts. They do great job.
NPR's great.
Oh, yeah. You know, it depends on what it is. I listen to some that are about, you know, cyber hacks and, like, listening to... There's one called Darknet Diaries that's very, very good. I listen to Planet Money, which is another great NPR one. And then I listen to some other people that got out of radio that are now doing this for a living. And I'm always curious the... their lifestyle and livelihood and how things are working with it. My wife listens to podcasts now. I got her into it, but she listens to a whole different thing. Are you married?
Divorced.
Divorced.
Thanks for reminding me, though.
Oh, yeah, of course. That seems another typical radio thing, though, doesn't it?
Well, you know what? I never wanted to be that cliche at all. And then, yeah, it is what it is. I have two kids, 13 and 14.
Oh, cool. Do they care about what you do?
No, not at all. Oh, do we have to go to the radio station again? You know, they hang out, and it drives them crazy. Their friends think it's the coolest thing in the world, but it drives them. Now that I do talk radio, the cool factor's gone way down for the kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, that, you know, there's that. Typical Canadians, in that my son plays hockey, and my daughter rides equestrian and dances. So.
Oh, wow. Well, of course the kids don't care. They're all the radio personalities say the exact same thing with their kids. They could care less about what their parents are doing. There's no cool factor to it when mom and dad are doing it. But if you bring on a big-time guest that they love, like, you know, you bring in a YouTuber, a popular YouTuber or something, then all of a sudden they got all the interest in the world.
All the interest in the world.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You have kids, one or two?
I have a four-year-old, one, and he, just 1 4-year-old. And he actually likes what I do. So he went from, you know, you talk about what he wants to do in the future. You know, what do you want to do when you grow up? At one point, he said he wants to be on the radio like me, which was really cute. Oh. But then he dropped that very quickly, and I think he now wants to be a train conductor. He's going through the train phase of his life, which he loves very much. It's probably better.
Son was a dump truck driver. That's what he wanted.
Oh, yeah. Or garbage truck driver, very popular. Fireman, policeman. He loves when he gets to interact with them here, too. Pilot is something he hasn't said yet, but maybe he'll go into that phase. Kids are weird in that sense where they don't care what their parents do. Like, for me, I didn't care what my parents did for a living. Did you?
Not at all. And I don't even really realize so much about it until even recently now that I look back at my parents and how hard they worked. And, you know, mom was the mom and she took jobs and then she eventually became a COO. And, you know, so it's remarkable to look at all the things that my parents did to make all this stuff work. And for me, it was like, what does your dad do? Yeah. I don't know. He's a millwright.
So you're in Calgary?
I'm in Calgary, yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering, like, today in American history, of course, September 11th, do you guys mention that in Canada?
We do. And in fact, so in Canada, there's expected to be a federal election call tomorrow. And some of the conversation, meaning that they're going to announce the election is going to happen. We already knew the date that it was going to happen. But in Canada, there's a date when all legislation stops and they can't do business anymore. And that's when the prime minister walks down to the governor general. They goes to the office, says, hey, we're going to freeze parliament. It's done. And then now we're going to call an election. And then for 5 weeks, it works up to about 40 days that nothing happens but, you know, the election or, you know, campaigning. Okay. And then the election happens and then moves on.
Wow. So
there's an awful lot of people are saying, well, why in the world, like how disrespectful is this to make this the day that you call the election? The fact that it's September 11th. I remember where I was that day.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Well, I was in college, and I was in class. I had no idea what was going on. This is before cell phones and things really that were popularized, and there was no texting. So the information really didn't spread unless you were in front of a television, and I wasn't. So I didn't learn about it until I got back in the dorm room when all my roommates were there watching the TV. All the classes were canceled, but, you know, I didn't know that. I had an early morning class. And I spent the rest of the day watching and calling family members using a calling card, you know, before the cell phones came in. And that's how I spent the day. And then wondering what was going to happen next, hearing announcements from the school of what they were going to do, if they were going to cancel classes again for the next day or how they're going to react to it and the different statements that came out. I think it was later that night. I think President George W. Bush made his address to the nation. And, you know, we started to wonder how are we going to go back to normal after something like this.
So many years later now, how does it affect you or Americans in general? Because their life has changed a lot in some ways, and in some ways it hasn't changed much at all. So what is the day like?
I think the day is it's I'm going to sound pretty harsh on this. The day is, you know, you go online and then you post your little social media. And then I don't know if many people actually take the moment to remember a day like this, which is just a time, you know, it's a sign of the times more than anything else. But I think that a lot of people do participate in the moments of silence, which they do when the planes hit the buildings. They'll have a ceremony in, you know, Washington, D.C., and I think they have one in Pennsylvania and, of course, New York City. They'll read the names, and I think a lot of people will watch and take a moment to listen to the names of the people that lost their lives and just take a moment to reflect on this, too. And I think that something different's going to happen here now that it was 18 years ago. You're talking about a whole new generation that will be, you know, graduating from high school that weren't alive when this happened, or people graduating from college that are too young to remember this. I think a lot of it's educating, too. You talk to, if you have someone younger in your family, someone that may not have experienced this firsthand, you take those moments to talk about what exactly happened and what happened after. And then you find yourself thanking first responders, knowing that at any given moment, if something like that were to happen in your city, they would be the ones to go in and try to save your life if you were involved in that. So you want to make sure you take that time to thank a fireman, a policeman, an EMT, anyone that would have been a first responder to a moment like that, because so many of them lost their lives, maybe not the day of, but you know, years after, because of the complications later and the issues that they had because of breathing in that terrible, terrible dust.
You know, I was in D.C. for the very first time this summer, and I drove by the Pentagon and tried to imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea where it really was in proximity to the D.C. and Springfield and all the cities that are around there. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. And I invite anybody, Americans or Canadians, if you've never gone to D.C., it's a remarkable place.
Yeah, I've been wanting to. I haven't been there myself, but I feel like we'll take a family trip there at some point. That is, it's interesting. So you come to the United States. Was D.C. the destination, or were you there for something else?
Yeah, D.C. was, I flew over top of you, went to Atlanta, then bounced over to Baltimore for D.C. It was just some study and learning, some time with my son. The Calgary elephants from the Calgary Zoo were split up, and they kind of went down to Florida and then to D.C., but at the Smithsonian at the zoo there, now they're all back together again. So we went to visit the Calgary elephants in the Washington, D.C. Zoo.
You made a trip to the United States to visit some elephants that came from Calgary.
Well, we didn't. It's not like we were like, hey, Mr. Elephant. But we love elephants in our family. We love what elephants represent. But at the same time, there was some study stuff. And then the son and I were looking for a trip together. And he loves the Washington Capitals. So we sort of tied all that.
What do you mean what elephants represent? What do you mean by that?
Well, Ella, the peacefulness, the way that the elephant parades are, the families, the intelligence behind elephants, the way they live their lives and the way they protect each other. It's pretty remarkable to learn about. Mm-hmm. And just for us, we just think they're pretty magical creatures.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess I never thought of them that way. Everyone has their thing. I thought it was some political leaning where
nothing political other than. And I'm not even big on. I mean, I'm big on, you know, we're all amazing people and amazing creatures on this earth. But that's aside from that, I'm not like, you know, save the whatever. I mean, I'm not like be reckless and ruin everything. I'm not that guy.
Do you?
But I'm like, hey, we could all be a little more responsible and be nice to people.
On your talk show, do you do a lot of politics?
Recently, we had a provincial election plus. Then there's the federal stuff coming up. So incidentally, no, for me, it's more about what's it like to live the life that we live with the politicians. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Kind of walking among the politicians.
Well, meaning like, you know, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Why do we not care? Or why do we not do anything about it? Or why are we complaining about it? Why are you the listener sitting there just phoning me and complaining? Mm-hmm. Because somebody else is standing on a street corner doing something about it.
How did you open the show tonight? What did you say?
On our program here?
Yeah, on your program.
The very first thing we did tonight?
Yeah, how did you open?
I have to go back in time. Now,
I'll tell you how I opened the show.
I
leave the building. The show goes until 2 o'clock central. And I saw someone walking down the road with a spine in their hand. A spine, something that you would see on a skeleton in a high school. Like they ripped the spine out of it. We're just walking around 2 a.m. in the morning with this thing in their hand. Strangest thing I've ever seen leaving the building here in downtown St. Louis. And apparently someone called in and said Target sells them as a Halloween decoration. It had to have been that. That's how I start the show, talking about some random person walking around with a spine in their hand.
Wow.
Is that how you would start a show, or do you go in hard and you just hit the ground running?
No, today was politics because of the election in Manitoba, a province that's just over top of your head there. From St. Louis north, a little bit to the left. And there's a provincial election there, so that's really important. We have a station that we broadcast on there. So we got into that. We talked about some other things like daylight savings time. We talked briefly about the Donald Trump-Bolton thing today and the mixed-up stories about you fired me or no, I quit, and that whole argument. And
You guys care about that up there.
Well, we care about that one. I mean, that's a big story. I mean, I think we care about all the things. I mean, it's kind of like your cousins, you know? You check in every couple of years.
Or every night, it seems like. Because I even hear during the breaks, I listen to your guys' news coverage, and you do cover a lot of American politics.
Yeah, trading partners, right? I mean, I think that the economies are so tangled now that you have to pay attention to the markets.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. You're going to be in next week again?
I'm going to be in next week. Thank you for this.
Shane Hewitt.
I've been looking forward to it.
I know. Yeah. I've been too. Thank you. It was nice to meet you.
And so nice to meet you, too. Ryan Recker from KMOX News.
Oh, there you go. Wow. Get someone new to talk to. Drek's out on vacation, and that is Shane Hewitt from Calgary filling in on the late shift. I'm impressed his knowledge of geography inside the United States because he said Manitoba, which is just north of Missouri, a little bit to the west. Like, how about that? I have some friends up in Winnipeg that actually listened to this radio program on 1120 AM. We actually had some people from Toronto call us before and say they listen to this program in Toronto because of the late shift and they like this radio program and they can pick us up on 1120 AM. It's amazing how that signal carries. Cool. Well, I got to meet a new radio person. He sounded very, very pleasant, didn't he? He sounded exactly how you would expect a pleasant Canadian to sound. All right. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. So I wanted to do this. We only got a couple minutes here, and we'll check your weather. But I saw this one story pop up because people were posting this video all over the internet. It has to do with Bryson Gray is the person's name. He attended the President Trump rally in North Carolina Monday night. And as the news crews were there covering this rally, they were talking to some of the people that were in the audience, which you would do, right? That's a pretty common, normal thing. Let's just go talk to some supporters. Well, one supporter had this giant red hat on. It wasn't like your regular fitted hat. It was more of one of those like foam style hats, but it was definitely oversized and it was meant to look like a regular ball cap. So the news reporter goes up to him and talks to this guy. What are you doing?
I have a lot of friends who tell me that I shouldn't support Donald Trump because I'm black, which is sort of insane because this is politics. I can support whoever the hell I want to support. But and then also they told me I shouldn't wear the MAGA hat, so I bought the biggest MAGA hat. So it makes it double the importance.
So he goes to the rally. He's African American and he's got this giant foam Make America Great Again hat on. And of course, he stands out. Apparently, President Trump even made mention to it. So he said, number one, you shouldn't be able to tell me what I need to think. Stop controlling my thoughts. It's the whole Kanye West deal. And number two, they told me I can't wear a Make America Great Again hat. So what I did was I bought the largest hat I can find and I started to wear it. Oh, that is something I would do. I told my wife about how I react to things. Oh, you're telling me I can't do that? Well, I'm going to do it twice as hard now. What are you going to, you're going to stop me from wearing a hat? Not, I wouldn't say to my wife that way, but I mean like society. What, you know, I can't wear a red hat that says Make America Great Again? So I told my wife, I just want to start wearing the hat around town to see how people respond to it. Because there's a lot of hateful people that do not like that hat. And I wanted to know if people would harass me for it. And my wife said, don't find out. You know, don't do it when I'm around. You can do it when you're alone. That's fine. I do have one of the hats I ordered off of Amazon. It's one of those knockoff, like cheap versions of the hat that I keep at the studio here just in case I need it for something like a prop or whatever. But I don't wear it. And maybe I should try to do that in public sometime. Bring a camera out and see what people say or yell or do, or see if people treat you differently going into coffee shops or restaurants or something around town. If anyone actually has experienced that before, I'd be curious what the reaction was to it. Because it seems like when someone's out there, it's bound for someone to harass you. That seems pretty common. I wonder if that would happen here in St. Louis. People are generally friendly in St. Louis and most of the places I've been to. But you never know. You get the wrong person to react to the wrong thing, I guess. It could get them on the off day or whatever. Got a couple of other things I wanted to get to, but I just wanted to say the spirit of that guy, we are lockstep. Yeah, someone tells me I can't do it, I'm going to do it twice as hard. Go ahead. There's a lawsuit that accuses wide receiver Antonio Brown in the NFL of rape. What's fascinating is the story of Antonio Brown this year. Absolutely crazy. And he actually went to the same college I went to. Well, we weren't there at the same time. He was there after me. But you read these things and you wonder how in the world he's been able to get away with what he's been doing as of late, including some of the racist things he's been doing. So we'll talk about that next. Welcome back to Overnight America. Got a couple minutes here and we'll spend it up until 2 o'clock, where the radio program concludes for the night, and we'll be back again tomorrow after Cardinals baseball. Let's hope they get a win. We're so spoiled with the way the Cardinals are playing right now. You see one like tonight and you think, all right, get the one out of the way. We'll just get, you know, several more in a row after that. But we'll hope for the best, and let's hope they get that win. I'm trying to find a tweet by Clay Travis. He's a talk show host. Doesn't make a lot of friends. Sometimes he is actually on Fox News for some of his more harsher takes, but I can't find this one, and I was looking for it because I saw people putting it in their article about Antonio Brown, and I think that it's a really good summary of how things are a little bit weird in the culture of the NFL. And one of the things that he mentions is that, oh, here we go. Okay, here's the tweet from September 6th. And this has to do with what really snowballed into Antonio Brown leaving the Oakland Raiders. And part of this was a confrontation he had with the general manager. So for a while there, he was really sandbagging. He said he didn't like the helmets. He was trying on different helmets. Apparently the team supplied many different helmets, but he said, I don't want to use the new helmets that the NFL is supplying or whatever. So it finally gets down to the time where it's time to play or whatever it is. And he gets in this shouting match. Apparently, this is what was reported. Antonio Brown called the general manager, Mike Mayock, a racial slur during a Wednesday practice, which ultimately led to him saying, release me, which they did. And ultimately, he was released from the team, gets $0 from the Oakland Raiders, and then was immediately picked up by the New England Patriots. So he uses this racial slur. Antonio Brown does to his general manager. And Clay Travis said, white star NFL player threatens to beat up black GM and calls him a racial slur on the field at work after the GM correctly fines him for violating terms of his contract. Team suspends him for only one practice. How do you think the woke sports media would react? So he said, imagine if it was a role reversal with all of the different discussions in the NFL and players kneeling and all of this stuff. Imagine if a white star used a racial slur and threatened to beat up the black general manager. Do you think that would have had a different reaction from the media that would have covered this? Absolutely, it would have. So Antonio Brown does that, uses these racial slurs against the GM, threatens to beat him up and all these things, eventually gets suspended by the team and then released from the team. Picks up by the New England Patriots. But you don't see too much when it comes to MSNBC, CNN, and things, the ones that would go out there and try to make this into the biggest deal in the world if the roles were reversed. But now something new has been released. A lawsuit accuses Antonio Brown of rape. And this is from the New York Times. They're the ones that broke this story. So Patriots receiver Antonio Brown has been accused of raping his former trainer, filed in a lawsuit on Tuesday in Florida. The lawsuit says that on three separate occasions, two in June of 2017 and another in May of 2018, he sexually assaulted a woman named Brittany Taylor, a gymnast who he met while attending Central Michigan University, my school of choice, together, and whom he hired as a trainer after he was out there. Now, I didn't go to school the same time he was there. He wasn't necessarily like a spectacular college player. Now, all things considered, you go under the radar when you go to a school like Central Michigan. There weren't a lot of very popular NFL players that came from Central Michigan. There were a few, but there's not like that super stud that would be the household name. We did have an NBA player, Chris Kaman, that was there the same time I was there, and he went on to have a nice little career in the NBA, and he was very popular on campus at that time, too. But I knew some of the players that played football when I was there, and they were very nice and cordial. I had some classes with them. Yes, they attended classes. Yes, they attended every class. Yes, they participated in class. This is even the quarterback for one season was there. So there wasn't any preferential treatment. They made sure that everything was on the up and up. And he was very nice. You know, every time I would pass him, we did a group together in a class. And every time I would see him on campus, we'd walk by each other. He'd say, "Hi, Ryan." Very, very nice. And this is even well after we got out of that class. So I was, you know, super nice. They have a nice program up there. But then again, they're not used to turning out superstars in that program. Actually, he went on to play for the NFL. I remember looking him up. I think he mostly played practice squads. I don't think he ever played an NFL game. But I read this article and I think, okay, Antonio Brown, what happened after you left that school? Because that's definitely not the culture that I remember at that school. So he goes and he plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And for that time, I think he was playing for them when these rape allegations have the timeline of these rape allegations. They say Mr. Lawyer came out. Mr. Brown denies each and every allegation in the lawsuit. According to the lawsuit, Brown sexually assaulted Taylor twice during training sessions. He exposed himself and kissed her without her permission. Later that month, the lawsuit says while she was watching television at home, Brown started, well, I don't want to read this out loud on KMOX, but think about something you would do on your own and then something else, and that's all. Brown bragged about the incident in a profane text messages that were copied in the lawsuit. So there is some his text messages. I don't know if he's going to deny those or not, but that probably doesn't look too good. Taylor ended her relationship with Brown, the lawsuit says, but for several months when he contacted her to apologize, she relented. She said, according to the lawsuit, swayed by his assurance that he would cease any sexual advances. But then on May 20th, after that point, Brown forced her onto a bed, according to this lawsuit, pushed her face into the mattress and forcibly raped her. She tried to resist. She screamed no and stop, but Brown refused and continued to rape her. This is what he's up against right now. I don't know how the NFL doesn't respond to this immediately. Of all the things, I mean, of the problems with trying to fight a GM, racial slurs, suspensions, issues, now rape allegations in a federal court. I know the NFL's got to do their due diligence, but if you are the New England Patriots, aren't you a little bit now changing your strategy? You think you got a good deal. He's one of the most talented wide receivers in the NFL, I'm told, or have been able to read. And you look at all the statistics he put up, and it's pretty remarkable. He had some really, really, really good statistics. You think you got yourself a diamond in the rough here. You're going to pick up and, hey, we can control crazy, they would think. We can take these crazy players, the ones that had issues on other teams, and we can wrangle them in because we're that good. And, you know, Tom Brady has a way of keeping things on the field, professional or whatever it is. I don't know how you turn something like this around. I don't know how you spin something like this. And if you're a team like the New England Patriots, do you really want this as part of under your banner? Do you want him being one of the people that represent your organization? You've had enough issues with some people in the past. It's not clear whether Taylor reported her accusations to the police. One thing that I saw on Twitter would be interesting. So since he signed with the New England Patriots, he was ineligible to play during this first week of games. He signed after the threshold, which would allow him to play. But he would be eligible to play this upcoming weekend. And I think the intention of the Patriots were to play them. They traveled to Miami in Florida, where these charges were filed, which means police can question or do even more while he's down in Florida. I mean, basically, he'd be coming to them in order to further along this lawsuit, voluntary or not. I think it would be smart if his lawyers would try to voluntarily have him cooperate with police, but we'll see how this works out. He's a troubled player to begin with. He's got all kinds of baggage and issues. So something like this, I don't think is just piling on. And Taylor said she's going to cooperate with the NFL investigation. However, that leads him. Brown is a resident of South Florida, 31 years old. And a spokesman for the Patriots said in an email that the team had not heard about the allegations or the lawsuit, but they're going to have to respond to this. Not looking good. CBS News is even reporting it. They put something down the wire not that long ago. Let's see what CBS News says about it. This is Matt Piper.
He's the New England Patriots' new star receiver. Antonio Brown has been accused of rape by a former trainer. Brittany Taylor says the 31-year-old sexually assaulted her on three occasions while they were both students at Central Michigan University. Brown's attorney says it was a consensual personal relationship. He was released by the Oakland Raiders just last week after clashing with the team throughout training camp. He agreed to a contract with New England on Saturday, but has yet to play for them. Matt Piper, CBS News.
I don't think that's actually true because I'm looking at this. Let me look up Antonio Brown statistics. I think he might have misspoke. I don't think this happened when he was at Central Michigan, because they're saying that the incidents two in June of 2017 and May of 2018. So he's been playing with the Steelers since 2010. So this would have happened well after he left the school. I mean, we're talking about several years after, but if he hired her, maybe they had other things that were not named as part of this lawsuit. I guess that could be possible. Oh, boy. All right. You know, it's amazing. Sometimes you get this star status and you get this, you get this thought in your mind that you're above things like this because you have celebrity clout, and things like this are forgivable to the idea that you can get away with things like this. It's not a good mindset. So Antonio Brown, man, Tony Dungy, one of the most respected coaches and people in the NFL organization in the history of the NFL, says you really screwed this up. Antonio Brown, you really screwed this up. And he's absolutely right about that. One more segment left before we say goodnight. It's Overnight America, KMOX. We're together for a couple more minutes. So thank you for joining us on Overnight America. Yeah, I told that story in the first hour, which we're getting our podcasting back up. We had a couple of days of having a hard time with the audio, but I think we're back to normal now, which is good. And KMOX.com/ONA is the way to check out any of the shows, including the first hour, where we cover a few different things. There's one story that producer Mike gave in the first hour, which is a missed connection, not like in a romantic way, but last Thursday, KMOX Day at the ballpark, before the game, we had the Cardinals broadcast live on the fourth level of Busch Stadium. Tom Ackerman was there, and he was doing the pregame leading up to the start of the game, and we had the ability to say hi to listeners, and the KMOX staff was out, and we were, you know, shaking hands and taking pictures, things like that. But before all of this started, a woman came up, and Mike believes her name was Kim. He doesn't know that for sure. But Kim came up and said, I was a nurse, and there's someone I've been trying to reach. I don't want to say who that person is on the air, but Mike knows who the person is, and you'd probably recognize too. And I was the nurse that was helping this person's mother in the end stages of her life up until she passed away. And this person's mother gave me a note to give to the kids. And I didn't put the connection together that it was the same person until years later. And I have this note, and I want to deliver this note to this individual. Now, producer Mike knew who that was. It's someone that, I don't want to say who it is again, but he said, sure, I believe what you're saying, and I want to deliver that note. So he took down this woman's name and phone number and put it inside of his phone. And right when they were about to start the broadcast, the woman leaves and hopes to hear back from this person. Well, at the start of a broadcast, things are a little bit hectic. You need to make sure everything's right. You need to really pay attention, because if you don't pay attention, something happens on air, something happens wrong. You don't want to take the blame for that. Plus, you don't want it to be a poor product. You're talking about 150 different radio stations that pick up this broadcast for the flagship of the Cardinals. And when he had a moment, he went to go text this person and said, hey, here's what happened. This woman by the name of Kim came up, said she was a nurse, and she worked with your mother on the end of her life, and she has a note that from your mother that we want to have her delivered to you. And he was ecstatic. He said, absolutely. Please, please, please. What's her number? I'll call her. Producer Mike opens up his phone and notices that the phone number did not save. And he doesn't have the person's name or number. And he instantly filled himself with dread, because he thought, oh, I can't believe this. And now he's worried because he doesn't want this person to think that the individual stiffed her. Like, he doesn't want to reach out. He doesn't want the person to think he's not grateful. And now Mike is stuck because he doesn't know who this person is or how to contact this person. So we thought maybe out of just pure luck, if the person's a KMOX listener, was they there at the KMOX day at the ballpark, maybe they listened to Overnight America. Maybe this is a story that they know and they can call into this program right now and tell us, please, your name and number so we can get that to the right person. So I wanted to tell that story. You know, does that sound familiar or does that sound like you? Were you there? Here's the number. Just call in and talk to producer Ben, 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. If you don't know, or maybe this story sounds a little bit familiar, maybe you know who the person might be. Maybe you think, oh, that sounds like, and then it may be that person. This is what I want you to do. Send them a link to the podcast and let them listen to producer Mike explain what happened. And if it is them, they'll have a better idea of how to contact us so we can connect the two. So the podcast is at KMOX.com/ONA, KMOX.com/ONA. One last thing before we go to break. I found that there is a certain power to napping. I love that CBS News decided to do a story about this because I love, love, love napping.
Researchers in Switzerland studied 3,500 adults. They found those who took one or two daytime naps per week had a 48% lower risk of heart attack, stroke, and heart failure compared to those who took no naps. Lack of sleep raises the risk of plaque buildup in the arteries.
You see, I don't get enough sleep in one sitting or one laying because I try to purposely split up my schedule because I found that if I just do, you know, 7 or 8 hours of sleeping at night and then I wake up and then it gets time for the show and I get in here and I'm tired because by the time I get home, it's like, oh, what a long day because my sleep schedule's reversed. And I also had a hard time staying up. I can't go home, stay up, and then, you know, sleep during the day. It doesn't work as well. So I split my sleep schedule. And ever since I started napping, I always was the anti-napper. Never wanted to nap, never would nap. But when I started napping, I realized this is the greatest thing ever. How come I never wanted to nap? I should have been napping all along. So I'm glad CBS finally has some health benefits to napping. Well, that does it for us here on Overnight America. I'm glad you joined us again. We'll be after Cardinals baseball tomorrow night. Hopefully the Cards turn it around. You can reach me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. We'll see you later.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.